Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Couch Rotato Podcast. Coming up on this week's episode, Dalton is a true gentleman with a degree in philosophy from NYU. He also has a flip side. He's the best bar bouncer in the business. When Dalton's brought in to clean up a popular establishment that's become particularly rowdy, his calm is put to the test. That's right, gang. We're diving into 1989's Roadhouse, starring Patrick Swayze, coming up right here, right now, on the Couch Rotato Podcast.
How's a guy like you end up a bouncer?
Just lucky, I guess.
Dalton's an unusual guy, and he's got an unusual job. His reputation is impressive.
I run the show completely.
And his demands are simple.
Be nice until it's time to not be nice.
Patrick Swayze.
Do you always carry your medical records around with you?
Saves time.
Roadhouse, rated R. Now play at theaters everywhere.
All right, Adam, got a question for you.
All right, shoot.
A couple weeks ago, Amazon Prime dropped a remake of the movie we're doing today. They dropped Roadhouse, an updated version, stars Jake Gyllenhaal and Conor McGregor. Did you get a chance to check that one out by chance?
I did not get a chance to check that out. I wanted to watch it. I have only seen the original Roadhouse a couple of times now, but I really like it, and so I wanted to check it out. Just did not get the chance to.
I watched it the Saturday after it had dropped. I think it's got some unnecessary hate on the internet. I thought it was solid. The only beef I have is I don't know what fucking movie Conor McGregor's in because he is doing his own thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was a solid remake. I mean, I probably won't watch it again. But it was pretty solid, though. Jake Gyllenhaal was pretty good. It just doesn't have some of the cool stuff that the original did. Doesn't have, like, the awesome, cheesy villain that we have in this one. There's no mention of JCPenney's at all, which I was a little disappointed about.
Well, I mean, it was the 80s during the original one, so you had to have the cheesy 80s villain, and you have to have them all somewhere.
Yeah. You know, I was originally going to introduce you in this episode as the man that's responsible for JCPenney's coming to Springfield, producer Adam. And it just didn't come to be. But we are doing Patrick Swayze's Roadhouse from 1989, which is getting ready to celebrate an anniversary here in about a month and a half. So I guess the timing's pretty good. We're going to get we're getting a little bit of a head start, but with the remake, I guess that kind of is a moot point. Yeah,
it falls good in between, I think.
Yeah. It's still relevant that the new one's out, and then here in a couple months, talk about the old one again. So yeah. When was the first time you seen Roadhouse?
So this is one of the movies that I was too young to see in the theaters. So I ended up seeing it on TV. Of course, it was a cut down version. Ended up seeing it when I probably was around 11 or 12, something like that. Pretty young for that kind of movie. But like I said, it was the TV version, so it was cut down a whole bunch. Ended up watching it again here. I think I'm pretty sure watching it before this podcast, and I might be wrong. I might have seen it again beforehand, but I'm pretty sure this is the second or third time I've seen this movie, watching it before doing this podcast.
Really?
So, yeah.
I know it used to be. I don't know if it still is or not, but I know this movie for a good 10 or 12 years was on cable, like TBS and TNT, like constantly.
I mean, and that's how I ended up seeing it.
Yeah, like TNT and TBS had more TNT. Like, I think they had that stable of like five movies they ran all the time. And like, it was Roadhouse, Shawshank Redemption. An incredible double feature if you're like homesick on like a Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, that's a great afternoon.
Yeah. You know, for me, I didn't see Roadhouse until probably, it might have been like early 2000s, like 2001. And the only reason I didn't watch it is because I refused. I thought the plot was fucking stupid. Like, okay, Patrick Swayze is a bouncer trying to clean up a small town in Missouri. Like, that sounds fucking ridiculous. And I love awesomely bad movies. But, like, that's too much. And I remember I come across it on TNT, I think, one night. And I happened to come across that scene where Brad Wesley is driving his car to the Shaboom Shaboom. And he's just weaving in and out on both sides of the road. I'm like, okay, I'll give this 10 minutes. And then 10 minutes became like 20. And the next thing I know, I watched the rest of it.
It's a good watch for sure. It's one of those ones that the plot kind of has to take the back burner a little bit when you're watching it.
Yeah. But, it's kind of like it's in that kind of that awkward phase action movies are going through at the time too, where we kind of had like Arnold and Sly, you know, like the big jacked up super action hero, but then we had just had a new breed of action hero with Bruce Willis and Die Hard, where you know you don't have to be 6'4", 280 pounds of pure muscle. You could be, you know, 5'10", 190 pounds, and they even reference it in the movie that he's smaller than they thought.
Yeah, except they thought that he wheeled his balls around in a dump truck.
Yeah. But, you know, like Roadhouse is just one of those movies, like you said, like the plot's a bit ridiculous. There's a lot of plot holes in this.
Yeah.
And it's not really a movie that you need to take seriously. But this is like, for me, if I looked up mindless action movie in the dictionary, Roadhouse would probably be the picture that they use to describe, like in the description. Dictionaries don't do that normally. I don't know why that's a fucking phrase, but, you know. If you're looking up like mindless action movie in the dictionary, it's going to say see Roadhouse. And then now they'd have to update it to see 1989.
Yeah. And the picture it paints for bouncers, and I'm going to preface this with saying I've never been a bouncer and I don't think I have any friends that have been bouncers.
I am not a bouncer. I've never done it.
I can guarantee you that is not how the job works at all. Like that's not how it happens. It's not, but it's very romanticized, for lack of a better term, in this movie.
Well, he's not a bouncer. He's a cooler.
Oh, it's a cooler. Yes. Yes. But still, that being said, not how the job works.
Right. But yeah, like whenever I catch it on, or sometimes if I just want to, if I'm like in a bad mood, like I just need something fun to watch for like an hour and 50 just to put me in a good mood. Like Roadhouse is in that bag of movies I'm going to gravitate towards to put me in a good mood, simply because it's so fucking over the top. And I think revisiting this last week, I honestly think that Brad Wesley is probably, I would say, in the top five of at least my top five favorite action movie villains. Of all time.
I don't know. I don't know if he's mine, only because his motives are super weak.
Well, no, he's just power hungry. That's all it is. And he just runs the town and like, he's like, you know what? Like no one's going to fucking stop me. So I'm just going to keep doing what I do.
He's also jilted. Like he got dumped by the doc. So,
right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's like the best, like, you know, action villains, like he's not on Hans Gruber's level or anything like that. But I mean, like, just in terms of like, man, I don't know what the fuck this dude's doing, but it's awesome.
Yeah. When he beats up his own goon, that was pretty, you get the sense that he's crazy.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why, the scene always, cracks me up is when he's eating breakfast. And he's kind of got that Scarface thing going where he's like eating breakfast with like his men, like hanging out around him, just watching him eat breakfast. Like they're not eating with him.
It's like, hey, I got to clock in. I need to watch Brad Wesley for like the next 8 hours. So he's going to grab like a sausage McMuffin on the way in. And then he's going to watch Brad eat this fucking 5-star like breakfast. But it always cracks me up though when his, I don't know if it's his wife's girlfriend or whatever. He's like being super calm and he just yells at her, turn that shit off.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of good stuff to dive into for this particular movie. So we're going to get right into it. Roadhouse, if my phone would load up. Thank you very much, iPhone. Roadhouse, Tale of the Tape. Roadhouse is rated R. So this is a movie that even though it was made in 1989, I highly recommend you keep the kiddos away from it. It's per se a staple that the 80s with a lot of gratuitous female nudity.
Some boobs.
Yeah. A lot of nudity in this one. So yeah, I mean, kids, wait till you get the okay from your parents, or I'm not encouraging you to do this, but you know, if your parents are my age, they tend to go to bed early. You can always sneak up and watch it on the old Netflix or wherever you stream movies. Roadhouse was released on May the 19th, 1989. Stars Patrick Swayze, Sam Elliott, Kelly Lynch, and Ben Gazzara. Directed by Rowdy Harrington. Now, before I dig any deeper into the Tale of the Tape, I looked up to see if Rowdy was like a nickname or like a stage name. Like, you know, like his real name is like Ronald Rowdy Harrington or, you know, like Jeff or, you know, something like that. Nope. His name is Rowdy Harrington.
It's a unique name.
Yeah. Well, he directed, I didn't really look too much into his IMDb, but he also did Striking Force or Striking Distance, that movie of Bruce Willis where he's the Pittsburgh River cop.
Oh, okay.
Rotten Tomatoes score 41% from critics and 67% from audiences. The critical consensus was whether Roadhouse is simply bad or so good it's or so bad it's good depends on largely. I don't know why Rotten Tomatoes had some misprints on here, but okay. Critical consensus, whether Roadhouse is simply bad or so bad it's good depends largely on the audience's fondness for Swayze and tolerance for violently cheesy action.
Yes.
You know, I thought about doing something, eliminating the Rotten Tomatoes score and maybe introducing like an AI version, like, I don't know, like maybe Roger Ebert, like what would Roger Ebert think of this movie?
Yeah.
And just have him like just ChatGPT, like just do like, what would Roger Ebert think of this? Or Siskel and Ebert, would they give this 2 thumbs up or whatever? Maybe we'll dick around with that.
Okay. Sounds good. Bad idea.
Box office, $15 million budget, grossed $62 million. So this was a fairly big hit at the box office. Nominated for, but did not win, 5 Golden Raspberry Awards, including Worst Picture, Worst Actor, Worst Supporting Actor for Ben Gazzara, Worst Director, and Worst Screenplay. Didn't win any of them, though, because they knew better. And you can watch Roadhouse right now on Amazon Prime. So you can watch the old one and then go watch the new one.
I believe it's also on HBO Max.
It is. The missus was flipping through HBO Max just last night and she was looking for, she watches a lot of documentaries. And as she was scrolling through, like, I just happened to see that iconic Roadhouse poster of Patrick Swayze, yep, like leaning up against like a wall. I'm like, ah, HBO Max knows what's up. So yeah, you can watch on HBO Max soon. I think it's on Netflix too. So I mean, there's a lot of different choices you can where you can access Roadhouse. But if you want to watch the new one, just do a double feature on Amazon Prime.
Yeah,
and Amazon Prime does have that really cool feature where it's I forget what it's called, but I just noticed it when I was watching the new one, where you can like kind of like scroll down on your remote and it kind of tells you the actors in the scene. And then you can like look and see what actor that actor's been in. And
Oh, that's cool.
And it, like, if there's a song playing, it'll tell you the song too. It's a really cool feature I didn't know about. So I might be doing some more movies on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, that's really cool. I didn't know about that.
Yeah. Did you know? These are some fun facts and tidbits about the behind the scenes making of Roadhouse. According to the cast and crew, and also in a 1989 interview with Sam Elliott, the original cut of the movie was 3 hours and 20 minutes long.
Huh.
And I never noticed this until I watched it last week, that when they fired the original bartender, Pat, who's Brad Wesley's nephew, I think.
Yeah.
Ernie, the bartender that replaces him, is none other than Keith David.
Yes. Yes. I did notice that in the opening credits, and I was like, oh, cool. And he's easy to miss.
So I looked into it, and yeah, he had a larger role in the movie, but to cut it down to, it's, I think Roadhouse runs like an hour and 58 minutes, something like that. They had to cut a lot of his stuff out. Because I guess when he comes to the bar, he gets into a fight with some people. And
oh, man, that sucks.
Yeah.
I like him. He's a good actor.
Keith David's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Arguably, like, one of the greatest, like, I guess, he's not an A-list guy.
Mm-hmm.
Solid B-list guy. Like, he's not on, like, he's not above the title, but when you look and you see, like, the fifth name on the movie poster says Keith David, like, all right, I'm in for a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. He plays one of my favorite video game characters of all time, too. So,
who's that?
I'm kind of pissed. He plays the Arbiter in Halo.
Okay. Yeah. You mentioned that in the Thing episode, which you can listen to on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Cheap plug of the episode.
I think that's the latest in the episode we've ever done a cheap plug.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Usually we go pretty early on, just plant the seeds.
Yeah.
You know, wet the beak, if you will. I like that euphemism. So Patrick Swayze hurt a knee during the filming of this, and it caused him to pass on two action movie roles. Can you guess the movies that he passed on?
Trying to think of action movies. Just go ahead and tell me, because I'm going to take too long guessing.
He was offered the role of Gabriel Cash in Tango and Cash, which that movie is a movie that we're going to be doing later this year. I'm marking it right now.
Okay.
I absolutely adore Tango and Cash. And he was offered the role of Mike Harrigan in Predator 2.
Oh, wow. And he turned it down for this movie, huh?
No, he didn't turn them down. He was offered these after Roadhouse, but he hurt his knee during the filming of this, so he couldn't do them. So he opted to do a little movie called Ghost.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he's pretty well known for that, so I think he did all right.
I think I'm going to ask a question about that later on in the episode, too.
Okay.
Annette Bening, Academy Award winning actress for American Beauty, star of stage and screen, was originally cast as the Doc. She was replaced by Kelly Lynch. I guess, according to Lynch in an interview, Bening was fired due to a lack of chemistry with Patrick Swayze.
Okay. I mean, it happens.
You know, Annette Bening was, like, before she became, like, this renowned, like, actress, a lot of prestigious movies she's been a part of. She was originally supposed to be Catwoman too in Batman Returns, but she was pregnant, so she couldn't do that one as well. So now that's an interesting fact that she was going to be in this one too. So,
no, I mean,
I guess Patrick Swayze's fame caused quite a bit of problems during filming. A group of middle-aged blonde women, and I don't know why they got that descriptive in this tidbit, but they did. A group of middle-aged blonde women attempted to drive up to his trailer, and I guess there was a raft filled with Patrick Swayze fans that sailed up the river during the big fight scene with Jimmy. Which I guess they had to do that scene numerous times, and now it's like, I wonder how many times these ladies caused a commotion.
Wow. Like, I just ripped out his throat like 3 times. Come on.
Because I was looking at Swayze's filmography, and he had released a couple of movies after Dirty Dancing, but if they were like kind of small movies, this was like the next big movie he'd done after Dirty Dancing. Because Dirty Dancing's what, 87? Yeah, 87. So yeah, naturally he's filming this in 88. So, yeah. It's what you get for putting, tell people not to put baby in the corner.
Yeah, exactly.
That interview earlier that I referenced with Sam Elliott, great quote about the stunts in this movie. According to Sam Elliott, all the actors did their own stunts. Quote, I fucking got the shit kicked out of me for the entire film. And I guess they were trained by Benny Uriquidez. I'm sorry if I mispronounced his name. But he's a holder of 9 black belts in 9 different disciplines. I guess he's a world famous kickboxer.
Oh, yeah.
Benny believed so much in Patrick Swayze's abilities that he suggested Swayze become a competitive kickboxer.
Well, I mean, that would have been cool to see.
Yeah. Patrick Swayze wrote Cliff's Edge and sang on it, and he wrote the song Raising Heaven, quotation marks, in hell tonight for the movie soundtrack.
Hmm. Did not know that either.
Well, you don't really strike me as the type, because I think what makes this show work is the yin and the yang. You're like you're the more cerebral film fan of the two of us. I just like mindless shit that amuses me. But I mean, yeah, I don't think you're mindless stuff. I just don't see you going into like, hey, I wonder what the Roadhouse soundtrack has on it.
Well, I actually do have a fun fact about the Roadhouse soundtrack.
Okay, well, I got one more for you, and I'd love to hear it. Okay. Red West, the actor that played the auto parts dealer, he was cast based on, I guess he has quite the interesting backstory that Rowdy Harrington found to be extremely fascinating. He was really good friends with Elvis Presley, and was also Elvis Presley's bodyguard for a period of time.
Wow. Okay.
And to this day, Red West has the greatest reaction to getting questioned for murder I've ever seen in a movie. He just kind of like looks like he was basically dragging the body because I didn't see anything. And he just like kind of looks around. Uh-huh. I didn't see nothing. Yeah. Of course, they did burn down his auto parts store, so fuck him.
Is that better than Tinkers? I got Polar Bear Fell on Me.
No, I'd say not. All right, what do you got, fun fact wise?
All right, so soundtrack fact that I was referencing earlier, I'll start off with that. Michael Kamen actually recycled some of the musical cues from Die Hard.
Oh, that's right. I did see Michael Kamen pop up in this.
He recycled some of the musical cues, so you should be able to hear some familiar sounds in the soundtrack to Roadhouse. Another one of mine is a goof, like I normally do. In the movie, you can actually see one of the background guys hand an antenna to Red, as he's a replacement antenna for Dalton's Buick. It's just in there. Like, you can see it plain as day. I kind of laughed at that. I thought it was like another employee at first. And I was like, nope, that's the background.
Yeah, I don't think... I think Red just works there by himself, so that makes it even better. Small operation that Red runs.
Right. And it's interesting that you said that everybody, at least according Who was it that said they did their own stunts? Was it Sam Elliott?
Well, it was reported that they did their own stunts, but Sam Elliott was quoted as saying he got the shit kicked out of him every day while he was filming.
I'm sure he did, but Patrick Swayze wanted to be the one to tackle the guy off the motorcycle, and they would not let him do it.
But yet they let him hurt his knee.
Yeah. Except, yeah, he hurt his knee and wasn't able to do certain roles. The film was a severe disappointment for Patrick Swayze. Don't know why, but you know, it looked like it was a severe disappointment to a lot of people. I enjoyed it, but you know, it's one of those movies.
It's one of those movies that got discovered like later on when it came out on home video, and especially on cable. It kind of had the legs that Shawshank Redemption did. Like, you know, Shawshank wasn't a big hit at the box office, and I think it wasn't until like later on when it was on TNT, like every 4 hours, that people like, and I don't know if like they were just hammered into submission, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a fucking amazing film. And I think Roadhouse was the same, just the fact that like, oh, hey, you know, what's this Patrick Swayze movie? This doesn't cost me anything to watch it. I'll fucking check it out. I'm like, oh, man.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
I mean, it's great. It's the violence in it, I think.
Yeah, it's got some.
That gets me.
It's pretty violent for an 89 movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely funny that I say that if you're a kid, don't watch this because of the gratuitous nudity. But yeah, you get to see a guy's throat get fucking ripped out.
Oh, yeah. That brings me to my next fact, actually. The body count in this movie is 8.
Really?
Eight people die. See, we got Sam Elliott. Spoilers if you haven't seen the movie yet.
It's fucking 1989. If you haven't seen Roadhouse now.
Yeah.
Well, we won't do the body count, but yeah, like few major characters meet their demise.
Right.
And some minor characters.
Yeah. Turns out to be 8. And as violent as it is, another fact, Dalton doesn't strike anybody in the movie until 26 minutes in.
Yeah, because he encourages his employees to be nice.
Yep, be nice. Be nice until it's time not to be nice.
I didn't include this in my notes, but I guess apparently that scene was included in training videos for the New York Police Department. They were showing like cadets, like on how to like properly handle like a tense situation.
Yeah.
Like, don't be physical, essentially, unless you absolutely have to, just no matter if they're calling you every name in the book or they take, you know, what does he say? Like, two words combined to elicit a response.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
sucker.
What if they said my mama was a whore?
Is she?
Oh man. You got anything else?
Nope, that is it for me.
All right. The Martin Scorsese, this is cinema award for the best scene of the movie. I had trouble narrowing this down.
I had a little bit of trouble, but I think I did narrow it down if I can lead off with mine.
Oh yeah, please.
So I really like a lot of the fight scenes. They're all so good. I think I read somewhere that there's 8 or 9 different fights. And I really like the ending too, because everybody like comes and shoots the bad guy and saves Patrick Swayze. Well, Patrick Swayze had him, and he decides not to like, you know, do anything because, you know, his love is upstairs like telling him not to, but
Yeah, let me really kill like everybody else.
Yeah, I killed everybody else already. No, that's the thing, is like, I don't get why she didn't like that he killed the one guy, and then he kills 7 other dudes and decides not to kill the main guy because she's standing right there.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, I like that scene. It's really well done. It's one of those scenes where you get satisfaction from seeing the bad guy lose, I guess. But I really, really like the river fight scene. It's so good.
Yeah, that one's really good.
That's my favorite.
I had that one as a contender. I also had Brad Wesley driving his car like a fucking maniac without a care in the world. I had that.
That's good.
I also had the fight scene where we get introduced to when Wade Garrett shows up.
Yeah.
And Terry Funk just drops that fucking line where he says, "Mind your own business, Dad." but for me, I kind of cheated a little bit. I basically had the entire, I had it in my notes as the siege at Brad Wesley's house.
Okay.
And I got my reasons why. We get the first off when his Mercedes is driving through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why he's doing this, but Pat, the bartender that gets fired for skimming, he's shooting a shotgun and he's dry humping the air. And I don't know if he feels like that's going to cause the bullets to go faster or what, but he's just dry humping the air for some fucking weird reason.
Like backwards drafting.
Yeah. the polar bear falls on Tinker.
Yep.
And of course, all right, I am going to spoil it. Brad Wesley gets murdered by all the town folk that he's done wrong. Red, the fucking auto dealer, which they drive a monster truck through the car dealership.
Yeah.
And all the bad shit that happens in this movie. This is the first appearance by the police.
Yeah, and you don't see they say, oh, he has the police in his pocket. You don't see the police for anything else.
Yeah, they don't show up the entire movie until the fucking end. And
that's so dumb.
You've got 6 or 7 people in that room, and not a single person knows why this guy's got like fucking 6 bullet holes in his chest. And they're just taking them at their word like they have no idea what's going on.
And this is the guy that, you know, was paying the police off.
Yeah.
You think the police would be like, we need to find out who killed this guy.
Right.
Because we're losing money on this deal.
Yeah, it's just like, he tripped over some of those taxidermied heads in his game room, which he did.
Fell on some bullets.
Yeah. Felt bad. He said that he wanted Dalton's ass to be on display. I don't know if he wanted his like actual derriere or whether he meant like Dalton himself, but that's my favorite scene in the movie. That's my favorite scene in the movie just because it's like in a very ludicrous movie. It's got some of the best stuff in the whole movie. And yeah,
it does.
I don't know. I have tried to figure it out for the last 20 years why Pat's dry humping the air, shooting the shot. I don't know why he's doing that. It drives me fucking nuts. I can't solve it.
Well, we can give it to that scene because that was on my list and it's also your favorite scene. So,
if anybody that, listens to this, our show email is in the show notes, please. If you know why he's dry humping air shooting the shotgun, please send me an email. Help me figure this out. It's really caused me to not sleep at night. Cause like, I'll wake up like, why the fuck would he do that again?
ultimate unsolved mystery of the movie.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So we're giving it to the, essentially the last 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
That's not a reflection of anything else, because like this was really fucking tough, because there's a lot of really cool shit in this movie.
There is. Like we said before, the lack of plot is made up for with all of the excellent set pieces and scenes with action.
The Andy Dufresne Get Busy Living or Get Busy Dying Award for the best or most quotable line of the movie. This was also tough, but when I really I really boiled it down to, you know, its purest form. I think it has to be Jimmy telling Dalton, I used to fuck guys like you in prison.
That's a good one.
And I don't know if it's a insult or a compliment. Because I could see it being an insult, like, yeah, you pretty boy, you're going to get beat up. Or if it's a compliment, like, you're actually a very striking man. I feel bad I have to beat you up.
He seems like he derives some sexual pleasure from fights just by the look on his face. So maybe it is a compliment.
You know what it reminds me of? It really gave me the vibes of, like, whenever Shooter McGavin would insult Happy Gilmore or anybody else, it sounds like it's awesome in his head, but it comes out completely the wrong way. Like, I eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast. And Happy you says, eat pieces of shit. Yeah, he's like, no. So it's like, oh man, that sounds so cool. Or like the George Costanza where they buy you the jerk store. Oh, yeah, it sounds awesome in your head, but when you actually say it, it's like, that's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
That's my favorite line. Although, Mind Your Own Business, Dad from Terry Funk was on was my actual winner up until last night.
Okay. All right. But both of those are great lines. I also like, you know, A Polar Bear Fell on Me, but, you know, that's a stupid throwaway line that I laugh at every time.
Also, a strong contender is JCPenney is here because of me.
That's such a dated line.
Yeah, that's not to skip ahead, but that's my most 1989 moment of the movie is JCPenney's a big fucking deal.
All the cars are pretty 1989 too.
Yeah, although like
Stacey's Bear is 1989.
I think most of the people that listen to the show probably don't remember JCPenney's being a thing, but usually, back when I was a kid, when it got time to do your school clothes shopping and you went to the mall, chances are mom and dad are getting the majority of your clothes from either Sears or JCPenney's.
Yep. And it's one of those big anchor stores, too. It's not like one of those tiny little shops. It's a big anchor store, and they were riding high in the 80s and 90s, and now not so much.
Yeah, I mean, they're still around, but I mean, fuck, yeah. You can get anything from clothing. You could buy yourself a brand new bed. Mom could get her hair done.
Yeah, they had a salon in the back. Yeah.
Yeah, kids. Mm-hmm. The one in Beaver Creek has a photo studio. We actually got my kids, my daughter, when she was a couple months old, we got her pictures done at the old JCPenney photo studio.
Yep.
But yeah, they were a big thing. So yeah, that's the most 1989 moment of the movie for me is JCPenney's was a thing.
Yeah. I think if I had to choose anything different, it would be the cars.
Or the mullets. Or a lot of mullets in this movie.
Yeah. So, but...
What was definitely your favorite line of the movie? I don't want to cut you off because I kind of went on.
But you're good. So I really like the be nice speech. I kind of wanted to have like that along with, you know, what if they call my mother a whore?
Yeah,
I wanted to include all that, but that's kind of cheating. So
it's not cheating. My favorite scene in the movie is the last 20 minutes of the movie, which has five or six scenes in it. So,
yeah. So I'm going to say the be nice monologue is my favorite line of the movie.
Yeah. I'd say that's probably the best line of the movie simply because like, it's good enough. Excuse me. I'm going to lose my voice all of a sudden. It's it was so good that the New York City Police Department puts it in training videos now. I mean, that speaks volumes to it.
Your line is great though.
I still like that. That's another mystery. Like, is it a compliment or is it an insult? So,
yeah.
Plus that just gives us a chance to give a little shine to Marshall Teague. Another tough category was the McLovin for the best supporting or scene stealing performance of the film. I'm nominating Sam Elliott as Wade Garrett.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not in the movie nearly as much as all the others, and his performance is great.
Yeah, he's like the Yoda to Dalton's like Luke Skywalker. Like, Luke Skywalker's good, but he learned everything from Wade Garrett. And we get introduced to him basically due to a phone call that Wade Garrett is working like at a wet t-shirt contest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, him, and then Sam Elliott is so fucking cool that Patrick Swayze has no qualms at all with Wade Garrett basically like dry humping the shit out of Kelly Lynch at that diner when they're dancing.
He's like, yeah, whatever.
And he's like, oh, whatever. Yeah. He ends up
dancing with his girl.
Yeah. No, no cares at all. It's like, oh, well, it's Wade fucking Garrett.
Yeah.
honorable mention, though, to Jeff Healey, who plays the band leader, which I just had it in there a second ago. What was his fucking name? Cody.
Cody. Yeah, Cody.
Jeff Healey was actually a legitimately great blues guitar player who was blind. Mm-hmm. That's why he plays the way he does. But yeah, I thought about nominating him. Simply because, like, his band's phenomenal in that movie, but you got to give it to Sam Elliott.
Quick side note: he also, like, when him and Dalton like meet up again for the first time, mentions how the Double Deuce is more of a like shithole than Dayton. And so Dayton, Ohio, kind of gets a mention there.
Yeah, lines that have aged beautifully. Yeah. Nothing's changed from
1989.
Exactly. So we're giving this to Sam Elliott.
Yeah, for sure.
Plus it's fucking Sam Elliott. I mean, come on. Like, he is like, if I won the lottery and I had just disposable income, like I could just do anything I wanted. One of the things I would do is I would send Sam Elliott a check to record my voicemail greeting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I'd also make sure he had it's not going to work without the mustache, dude.
Yeah.
No one's going to see it, but I know that you recorded that.
Quality. Yeah.
It just
like that mustache adds that extra muffle to the voice, I think.
It'll be like, hey, listen, dude, I know you recorded this clean shaven. It really bums me out that every time I hear that, I knew you didn't do this with the mustache. So can you please just like grow the mustache out? I'll shoot you an extra $5,000.
That's an expensive mustache.
But I've won the lottery, so who gives a shit? The IMDb Drug Dealer Number 2 Award for the actor or actress you've seen in a movie or television show before, but you don't know who they are. My nominee is Terry Funk.
See, I didn't have one for this because I couldn't, like, I didn't have that aha moment, but you're right.
Simply because, like, if for a pre-Attitude Era wrestling, he's probably best known as Chainsaw Charlie, but prior to that, he's probably one of the most influential wrestlers of the last 50 years. A lot of guys that wrestle today list Terry Funk as an inspiration and kind of like the guy that got him in the wrestling. He's kind of a legend in the hardcore matches later in his career, but yeah, Terry Funk, legendary wrestler for over 50 years, just recently passed away not too long ago. Yeah, he's. I think it might have been earlier this year, or late. No, it was late last year.
Okay.
But yeah, but he has appeared in movies. He's probably best known for being in this movie, and he was in Over the Top, the Sylvester Stallone divorce arm wrestling movie.
Okay. That's one that I haven't seen, but I've heard of and know by reputation.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance, Norm MacDonald does a pretty funny bit about he's in a Saturday Night Live skit with Stallone when he was the host, and he's talking about Over the Top being like an arm wrestling movie. Hey man, like I don't know, Stallone couldn't do no wrong. That movie was a big fucking hit. I know a lot of people love him some Over the Top.
Well, that's what all this this movie is Over the Top.
That's true.
The genre. Excellent genre.
We already done the most 1989 moment of the movie. The newest category to the show is the Indiana Jones It Belongs in a Museum Award for the prop you would want for your personal collection from this movie. I am nominating Brad Wesley's wardrobe. Anything from his wardrobe I would take.
Yeah, that's a good one. I would say the polar bear.
Oh, dude, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's the winner. Yeah. I thought about one of the two pool tables that Brad Wesley has in his house, and I don't understand why he's got two pool tables in his house. He must be running like weekly tournaments in there, but
yeah,
I thought about one of those. Or, I mean, you could say Dalton's Mercedes, but it's a car.
It's also a flaming wreck by the end.
Yeah,
spins over and blows up. Did they actually blow up or Mercedes for that? I would assume so because they had to get it captured in camera back then, but like,
yeah,
was it actually a Mercedes or did they use a stunt car, like a fake car?
I don't know. I didn't really dive into it. I'm sure it was probably like one of them prop cars, you know, like they kind of build, you know, it's probably like a Pinto with like a Mercedes frame.
I would feel really bad to blow up a Mercedes like that, though. So they probably would do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Save the Mercedes.
The polar bear, though, is the obvious answer. Because, I mean, you could place that in the corner of your house and it's set.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's an easy choice.
It would be a good talking point, too. Like, yeah. What's that?
Oh, that's the bear from Roadhouse. Fell on Tinker. I picked it up and took it. Let's see, like Brad Wesley's wardrobe, though, is like, what do you pick? Like, do I want the pink robe from the pool party? Do I want that bitchin' fucking denim shirt and khaki vest when he's riding on the four-wheeler? Do I want the fedora with the olive green jacket? It's too many choices.
There's a lot.
Yeah, so man, the polar bear
wins. His wardrobe is the most 1989.
Yeah, there's a lot of 1989 in that one. But yeah, polar bear wins. Easy talking point. And plus, you know, if you face that a certain way in your living room and it's facing the window, no one's getting in your house. Like, they got a fucking live polar bear in there. And it looks like he's ready to pounce.
Man, if only Kevin McAllister had it.
Right. Sticky bandits wouldn't stand a chance. Hall of Fame plaque. This award is for the if this actor, actress, director, whomever is going to the Hall of Fame, would this be the movie that's featured on their Hall of Fame plaque? Patrick Swayze.
No. And the only reason I say that is because of Ghost.
Would it be Ghost or would it be Dirty Dancing?
Ooh,
or
yeah,
would it be
right.
Point Dirty. Break? I mean, I would say it's probably between Point Break or Ghost or Dirty Dancing. I think Ghost was the bigger hit, but Dirty Dancing is more of a pop culture. Like, it's still pretty pop culturally relevant.
Yeah, it's more popular of the two for sure. So I would say Dirty Dancing, even though I like the movie Ghost better, but you know, that's just me.
Sam Elliott.
Again, I said probably not.
What would Sam Elliott's be?
That's a good question.
Because isn't he's in one of those Taylor Sheridan Yellowstone shows now.
Yeah.
He was a big part of the Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
He was nominated for an Academy Award, his only Academy Award nomination, for A Star Is Born.
Yeah.
So I'm going to look it up on Wikipedia real quick just to see what they say. This is like what he's best known for.
See, Star Is Born, The Hero.
Yeah, he was in, and Mask, he was in that. He was in fucking Tombstone as well.
He was.
But I don't think, like, when you think of Tombstone, though, he's not, like, one of the first two or three names that you think of.
Right. And Tombstone is another one of our podcasts that you can listen to anywhere you get podcasts.
Mm. Cheap plug. Second cheap plug of the episode. I'm going to say A Star Is Born simply because he got an Oscar nomination for it.
Yeah. I'm going to say A Star Is Born, too. I just that Roadhouse is one of those movies where it's hard to put an actor into, like, it's hard to put into an actor's Hall of Fame.
Well, my next nominee has a very strong case for this. Kelly Lynch.
Yeah, probably her.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, I don't know if you've ever seen a movie. She did, I think, a year or two later called Drugstore Cowboy. It had her and Matt Dillon in it.
No, I never saw that one.
She's really good in it. It's basically, if I remember the premise right, I think it's about like being hooked on like prescription medication.
Okay.
Gus Van Sant film. And
I think she was in that early 2000s Charlie's Angels too, wasn't she? I'm pretty sure.
Oh, you know what, though? She was in Curly Sue as well, and Cocktail.
So
I forgot all about Cocktail. And, like, I just looked at her IMDb, and, like, I forgot all about Curly Sue. My mom, like, that movie had a bit of run to my house as a kid. My mom fucking loved that movie. And I think it's because the little girl, and it's pretty adorable. But,
yeah,
I'm still going with Roadhouse, though.
Yeah, Roadhouse all the way.
And then the last one is Ben Gazzara. Now, he was also Jackie Treehorn in The Big Lebowski. And he's also a very accomplished stage actor as well. And he's won... Damn, he's actually got a pretty extensive pedigree. He received numerous accolades, including a Primetime Emmy and a Drama Desk Award, which a Drama Desk is excellence in New York theater. He's been nominated for 3 Golden Globes and 3 Tony Awards. So he's a very accomplished stage actor. But I think it's got to be, I still think if you're putting him in the Hall of Fame, it's for this movie, because he's even on record as saying that out of anything he's done, people come up to him all the time and talk about this movie to him.
Yeah, I don't see. I remember him most from The Big Lebowski, but that's probably because I've seen The Big Lebowski a gajillion times. But he's definitely more of a presence in Roadhouse. So I'm going to have to say, yeah, for Roadhouse as well.
All right. So yeah, Ben Gazzara is getting in with Roadhouse. Burning questions. This is going forward, this will replace the unsolved mysteries of the movie, because it's like it's same category, just different name.
Yeah.
is there in the Roadhouse universe? I'm going to ask you this. In the Roadhouse universe, is there a bar bouncer cooler like magazine that comes out like every couple of months, or like maybe a quarterly magazine or something like that? Because a lot of people know who Dalton and Wade Garrett are. And this is pre-internet.
Yeah, pre-internet. And word of mouth doesn't spread that fast. So there's got to be some kind of like periodical or something.
Yeah, like they do like a feature. Like, oh, this is, it's kind of like the Playboy for bouncers. It's like, you know, they give you like the stats and like, oh yeah, Wade Garrett, he loves fucking fighting and drinking.
I love after every time that one of them got beat up in a fight, and you know, nobody wins a fight, right? But they end up like, you know, winning most of the time. It's like, go have a beer. It's like, yeah, that'll take the edge off.
You know what though? I wish that were a thing though. Like now, like people like in today's society get so fucking pissed off and they want to like go grab a gun and kill somebody. Like, hey, you know what? Our differences boiled down to, we had to get into a fist fight to resolve our differences. You were the better man this time. Let's have a beer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like these wins and losses are reflected on anything. It's not like they're part of a magazine. Like, okay, like, yeah, like Russ is like 2-5 in fights. I'm really dropping right in the rankings. Like, so we're in agreement that there's some kind of magazine or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's got to be something. It's definitely not word of mouth.
And I've always wondered if like they did like half nude centerfolds in these, because I don't know if you noticed this or not, but Kevin Teague or Tyge, he plays Tillman, the guy that buys the Double Deuce and hires Dalton.
Yeah.
He looks at him a certain way. Like he's got a crush on him. You know what I mean? It's not like, hey, I need the best to clean up my bar. It just, he kind of looks at him like he's attracted to him, which I mean, hey, it's Patrick Swayze. I mean, come on. I mean,
yeah. And you know, it's the 80s. He probably just doesn't say it out loud, but you know, it's cool. He can have a crush on Patrick Swayze.
Yeah. I just, you know, it kind of struck me as like, he just looks at him in a way.
Yeah, he does. Like, he probably does have like a slight crush on him. Like, yeah, I'm attracted to this guy. I want to watch him beat up guys every day.
It's not quite as apparent as like Scotty J and Dirk Diggler and Boogie Nights, but it's
it's in the
neighborhood.
Right.
All right. Next question I have: better band playing inside of a cage, the Blues Brothers Band or the Double Deuce House Band?
Oh man. Blues Brothers would be out of place, I think. But man,
well, they played at that honky tonk, bar as the good old boys.
But yeah, Blues Brothers would, I'm a bigger fan of the Blues Brothers. So I'd say Blues Brothers.
Yeah. They do a pretty bitchin' rendition of Rawhide.
Yeah.
And they keep like, after they turn the ship around and like they get the approval of the crowd, they're still throwing fucking beer bottles at them.
Yeah.
I think the Blues Brothers win, although the House Band and at the Double Deuce, like they had more experience inside the cage, because it seems like they played in that cage for a good chunk of the movie.
Yeah. Before the bar got cleaned up a little bit.
Yeah. We're giving it to the Blues Brothers though.
Yep.
Is Roadhouse on the Mount Rushmore of awesome bad movies?
Yes.
Oh yeah. I think it starts the trend, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause if you look like critically, it's panned. Like the Rotten Tomatoes score isn't great. All the critics are very critical.
Right.
And the Metacritic score is abysmally low. If you're a subscriber to Metacritic over Rotten Tomatoes. But it's still for it did okay at the box office, so it's not a cult classic, but it's still
I think it is a cult classic though. I mean, I would consider it one because I think it gained more. I mean, at least my definition of a cult classic is a movie that has gained notoriety and has become more popular after its theatrical run. Like I'd say like The Big Lebowski is like a cult classic. Rocky Horror Picture Show definitely is a cult classic.
Definitely. Yeah. Usually, at least in my definition, it did a modest to, you know, poor box office.
It had a respectable return.
Yeah, and it did have a so that's kind of why I don't know if it falls under that category. But you're right; it does gain more popularity over time. So I guess it could be considered a cult classic.
Wow.
And I think that, you know, that's a testament to how great the action is in it, because you don't really. It's like the Doom video game. You don't need a compelling story to have it be awesome. You just need to have lots of violence and awesome scenes.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, like I was looking when we were talking about like its box office return, it came out a week before Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Okay.
And it came out a couple weeks before Batman.
So, yeah, no, it still did okay though. So
yeah, it was Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Then it was Ghostbusters 2. Then it was Batman, and then Lethal Weapon 2. Like it had some competition.
89 was great for movies, wasn't it?
89 was a fucking banger, man. I think Honey, I Shrunk the Kids came out later that summer too. The Abyss was that summer. That was a fucking awesome, awesome movie year. Kind of a forgotten awesome movie year. And we got fucking Roadhouse.
Yeah. Man, if I had a time machine, that's what I would do. I would go back to great movie years and just watch movies all year.
Well, I would find a way to like bring something back so I can become super rich. Then I would do that.
Great Sports Almanac.
Exactly.
Back to the Future episode that you can listen to wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's true. We've done that movie twice. Is Patrick Swayze's legacy going to be as an action star or as a romantic lead? Now, I'm bringing into... for those of you that don't know, Patrick Swayze, we lost him pretty early. He had pancreatic cancer, so we weren't really able to get as much of an awesome filmography as we could have, but he kind of flamed out pretty quick. I mean, he had like a pretty awesome 5-year run. And then just after that,
yeah,
nothing, but he had Dirty Dancing and Ghost.
Right.
And then he has Roadhouse and Point Break, which Point Break, I know, wasn't like a huge box office hit, but when you consider like looking at it now, it didn't quite crack our action movie Hall of Fame, but it's considered by most to be one of the probably at least in the top 25 greatest action movies of all time.
Which again, you can listen to wherever you get podcasts.
That's fucking four. But, we are rolling tonight.
But I think. And this goes back to our previous Hall of Fame. I think he's more well known for Ghost and Dirty Dancing. And so I think he would have to be more of a romantic lead than an action star.
That's kind of what I was thinking too. I mean, as great as Roadhouse and Point Break are, he was even in Red Dawn, which is kind of a cool Cold War 80s action flick, which was the first PG-13 movie.
Oh, okay.
I think we talked about that in Gremlins, which you can also hear on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, Dirty Dancing is probably in pop culture, probably... at least for romantic movies, still relevant to this day. I mean, it's kind of like in a handful of like those romantic dramas that people still gravitate towards. I think Ghost has been kind of forgotten.
Yeah.
I mean, even though it was like, I think it was the premise. Ghost was like, it wasn't the number one movie of 1990 because that was Home Alone. Ghost was like the biggest movie of the summer. And that had like a lot of like, there was a lot of heavy hitters that came out in 1990. But Ghost kind of got forgot. I mean, it's still not forgotten, but it's kind of not mentioned in the same breath.
Yeah, no, I mean, sometimes you get some parodies of that pottery scene, but other than that.
Yeah, the clay scene got a bit of run. But yeah, I still think like Dirty Dancing though. So yeah, I think he's more as a romantic lead. But a follow-up question, why do you think like Patrick Swayze like kind of fizzled out? Because I mean, like I said, he had from 87 to like 91, he had Dirty Dancing, Roadhouse, Ghost. Oh, before that, he had Next of Kin, which is also like not quite an upper echelon action movie, still a solid action movie. I think came out the same year as Roadhouse, just later in the year. But he had Ghost and Point Break, and then just kind of fizzled after that.
Yeah. When did he start getting sick?
I think that was in the 2000s.
Was it? Okay.
So I remember he was on that show A&E called The Beast, which was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And he died right after that came out.
So yeah, we have a good probably 10-year gap where he's just not as popular anymore. He's not doing as much movie wise.
I'm going to look up Patrick Swayze's IMDb real quick just to get an idea.
Maybe he was just getting too old. I mean, he was cast in those roles based on his sex appeal, I think. At least the romantic portion. So, like, maybe he's just getting too old to play that kind of, you know, that role anymore. Because he is more popular as a romantic lead, I think. He might have also started flopping too. I don't know.
Yeah, because he, like, the only movie of note that he made after Point Break was he was in Tu Wong Fu, which that was kind of a. Kind of a big damn. He died 2009, it looks like.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. From Patrick Swayze's IMDb from 83 to 91. The Outsiders. He was in Red Dawn. He was in Youngblood, which is a kind of a cool, sports movie, hockey movie. Then he was in Dirty Dancing. He was in Roadhouse, Next to Kin, Point or Ghost, and then Point Break. And then he follows that up with the Player, which he's kind of like more of a cameo in that. But he did Fatherhood. I don't even remember that one. He did that Disney movie where they do like the Fables, because he would play Pecos Bill. Then he did Tu Wong Fu in 95, and then it's Three Wishes, Black Dog. He was in Donnie Darko. And then, yeah.
So I'm going to chalk it up to just not being in super successful movies. And
Star kind of fizzled. That.
Yeah, and he kind of has that 80s stud swagger, and that kind of fell off too, going into the 90s. So,
yeah, I was gonna say he kind of fit into the 80s, but didn't really have a look that translated past that. That's kind of what I was looking at.
Yeah.
Last category, the Finding Forrester. You're the Man Now, Dog. Award for the biggest life lesson taken from this movie. And in Roadhouse, I think the biggest life lesson is be nice. It'll keep you alive. Just ask Brad Wesley.
Right. Be nice until it's time to not be nice. And then take it outside.
Yeah. See, Brad Wesley was a dickhead, and then look what happens to him. So, yep.
Right.
Just be a nice human being and you won't get murdered by the town folk. And and your crime will go unsolved because of incompetent police.
Hopefully, a second life lesson that you can take from this is don't stand next to taxidermied polar bears.
Yeah.
Because they could fall on you.
Yeah, they could get pushed onto you and you could meet a very harmful fate. Or you just get taken off of you and then like be fine. That could happen too. Yeah. Happens to that, old Tinker.
And see if Tinker was nice, it wouldn't have happened to him.
That's right. He just would have left well enough alone.
Just be nice.
Oh, you know, looking back at that, I don't know if it's the same guy, but I don't know why I just thought of it, but one of Brad Wesley's goons, I think, is one of the guys that kidnapped Dan Marino and Ace Ventura.
Probably.
And I don't know why I was thinking that, because I was like going over like the people that were like part of his like gang. And I just like, I remember that the guy, the big guy, and I think he's the guy who goes, "Where's the smelt?"
Yeah.
And Ace Ventura. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up Roadhouse today. Hope you guys and gals enjoyed it. And if you dug what you heard here today on the show, please give us a like, a follow, and a quick review on Apple Podcast. We'd appreciate the love and support. You can listen to the show wherever you get podcasts. So hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on episodes each and every week. We are on social media. We are on Facebook, Twitter, Twix, X, whatever the fuck it's called now, Instagram, Threads. All that is in the description below. So until next week, we will talk to you guys and gals later.
Bye.